Hello, I'm Luca De Giglio, and this is the Web3 in Travel podcast, where you can learn about crypto, blockchain, and how the new internet will change travel.
One of the main reasons the travel industry is not adopting Web3 is legitimacy. The perception is that crypto is still full of or just speculation, grifters and scams, and there's really a lot of bad actors in it. So when the conversation starts on these bases, it's hard to have a constructive discussion, right? And it's true. I mean, crypto is full of scams and grifters, etc. That's part of the package. Now, if you know crypto enough, you know that this is just, again, part of the package. And beyond the fog of scams and speculation, there's something really fundamentally valuable. But how do you communicate this when, again, when you are perceived as somebody from an industry which is just scams and speculations? And there's not really an easy answer here. But what happened last week is that we got a very big boost in legitimacy from the Bitcoin ETF. What is the Bitcoin ETF? Well, simply put, is Bitcoin is now something you can buy through your traditional financial products, financial platforms, right? Maybe we can call this TradFi. That's how we call it in DeFi, traditional finance, TradFi. And so after a delay of about 10 years, I think the first ETF application was made by the Winklevoss brothers, you know, the Facebook guys from the movie, the social network, the twins, 10 years ago, something like that, maybe even 11 years ago. And it's been constantly rejected by the SEC, mostly for political reasons, I would say, because, you know, they have accepted much more risky ETFs in the years, until the SEC was basically forced by the courts to accept the Bitcoin ETF. So now we have, I think, 13 firms, or most Wall Street ETF firms, except for, I think, Vanguard, which is a big one, not doing that. But yeah, Bitcoin is now on par with gold ETFs, real estate, funds, indexes, and all these things. I'm not really knowledgeable about that kind of finance, but Bitcoin has been legitimized. And now we have companies, traditional companies, who have this Bitcoin ETF as a product, and they have to sell it. And they are starting to sell Bitcoin to the other 95% of the world, basically. Or maybe that's a wrong percent, because we are limited to people who have access to this traditional financial product. So let's say to the other majority of Americans, American investors, basically. And you start seeing advertisement on TV selling these Bitcoin ETFs. There's a new ad from BlackRock. BlackRock is an enormous company, where there's a guy, you know, simply a young guy, talking about Bitcoin in very traditional terms, very palatable to that crowd. Of course, they know how to speak to their customers, right? This is new. Bitcoin has always been kind of shielded by, you know, people on the fringe in a way, or, you know, YouTubers, and in very, I would say, aggressive terms by young people who say this is a tool against the state, against the government, against the institutions, for freedom, etc., which is a whole narrative, you know, I kind of ascribe to. But now we also have, apart from this, the traditional Wall Street firms telling you, buy some Bitcoin ETF because it's a good part of your portfolio. It could be kind of an hedge against other things and whatever those people talk about all day. So it's a new paradigm. This is really something which changes the landscape, not for Bitcoin only, but for crypto in general. Now, one mistake we can do here is look, okay, what happened right after they launched the ETF? oh, the price crashed a little bit. Maybe 5-10%. This is really a little bit in crypto terms. Even if we went up like 80% for the last year in the, you know, anticipation of this ETF. And the price here is not the deal. The price doesn't really matter, especially the short-term price. What matters here is that now Bitcoin is legitimized. And what matters for us in Web3 and travel is that now crypto is more legitimized than a week ago. And that will change everything for us in 2024. So when I say it's legitimized already, actually it's not yet. It's starting a process of legitimization. So most people in travel may have heard about the Bitcoin ETF, but it's just an information against other many information coming out, you know, from our screens all day. But the process of changing your perspective on something which you have either ignored or despised for a while, it's a long one. So they will see the ads from BlackRock, they will see ads from other companies, and they will see Bitcoin shielded by older people, more serious people, more traditional companies. And that will kind of change a little bit the perception. And then they will get sooner or later their financial advisors coming to them and say, have you heard about Bitcoin? And I would suggest your 1% allocation, your portfolio. And they will go like, what, Bitcoin, really? And, you know, and this process is going to take a bit. I have no idea, a year, 2 years, 3 years. But it has started. It is not going to go back, right? Now, if you add to this the fact that the price will go up in the future, in price, again, for all the wrong reasons, price brings legitimacy. In short, things will become a bit easier for us. When we go in the travel industry, which is not crypto-friendly, and talk about crypto. Now, this would have happened anyway. In bull markets, again, because the price goes up, people start paying attention. But it's always short-lived. It's a year or two, and then there's a big crash because somebody, you know, fucks up again. And then we are again back into the dungeons trying to build to survive, right? But this time, we have something which is not going to go away. I mean, unless ETFs, you know, Bitcoin ETFs go away. I don't know if this can happen, but we have crossed a limit. Some said cross the Rubicon, like we're not going to go back. Now Bitcoin has reached a level which was almost unimaginable when I started this journey in 2013. Even if, you know, to be there at that time, you really had to have vision and to believe. And I thought that it was actually possible. I still think central banks will have Bitcoin in the future. And Bitcoin will replace or become at par with gold as a store of value for humanity. But it has happened. You know, those things you've been, I wouldn't say dream of, but you've been expecting for years. And then you still believe in them, but they keep not happening. And then they happen, right? So I have personally not adjusted yet to this new reality. So I'm saying, you know, the no-coiners, people who don't have crypto, people who hate crypto, are going to have to change their perception on crypto. And it is going to take time. It is going to take time for me, and it is going to take time for, I suppose, all of us. This is one of those big changes in paradigm, which you don't simply get as an information in your brain. You really have to interiorize them. And that takes time, right? So I'm kind of talking to myself here, trying to tell myself, look, things have changed. Now you're not part of the fringe anymore. You are mainstream. And I'm trying to understand how to play this in the Web3 and travel. And I'm here with a question. I'm here not with with any answers. And in this episode, I will try to start giving some answers and see if we can together find the new direction in this. Maybe I'm overplaying it. It may look like, okay, the BDF, the ETF has been approved. That's a Bitcoin ETF. It's nothing to do with crypto. We are at the same place as we were before. But no, I am convinced this has changed everything. But before that, I want to talk about something, in my opinion, fundamental. Because this ETF gives us the chance to reason more on the difference between custody, third-party custody, and self-custody. Now, what is the Bitcoin ETF? If you buy a Bitcoin ETF, will you get Bitcoin? No, you will not get Bitcoin. An ETF, it's always a representation of something. Like I said, when you buy a gold ETF, you're not getting gold. You don't have some gold in the vault waiting for you. You buy price exposure to gold. So if gold goes up, your ETF goes up. Most of the times it goes up very close to the spot gold price being the price of gold, basically, the one you get on the street in a way. But there's no really gold there. Plus, the gold ETF is different, if I am correct. There's more gold ETF than gold out there. So there's, you know, these ETFs which are not really backed by gold. So there's a lot of money in gold, which is not, there's not even enough gold for that. So that's how, in a way, I am told they control the price of gold in the last years. But Bitcoin is different. Every time someone buys a Bitcoin ETF, there is Bitcoin backing it, right? So if you buy some Bitcoin ETF from somebody else, the company behind the ETF is not going to buy Bitcoin because they bought it already. But you're actually holding a representation of some real Bitcoin out there. Now, is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Well, it is a good thing for the reasons I explained before, legitimacy, most of it, but it's also a bad thing. Why do I say that? Well, it's a bad thing because the whole idea of Bitcoin is that you hold it in your own wallet. When you hold Bitcoin in your wallet, nobody can take it away from you from a centralized position. So the only way to take it away from you was like to come in with the police and say, give me your Bitcoin. But there's no central system which can say, okay, your money is not there, like banks can do, for instance, right? And when you hold Bitcoin in this way, self-custodial, you are part of the consensus. So let's talk about the consensus. All these things are really important also for Web Chain Travel, right? So who decides what in a protocol. So the consensus is like the way we decide what Bitcoin will do in the future. Now, will we make bigger blocks to make it faster but less decentralized? Will we change the number of maximum Bitcoins in existence? Will we add some software modification which allows for, I don't know, NFTs? Will we remove the NFTs, like what's happening with the discussion happening with Ordinals? All those kinds of things, right? And the consensus is made of mainly three different participants. One are the miners. The miners are running the code. The others are the developers. The developers are writing the code. And the other is the market. The market is actually buying or selling Bitcoin. So let's say that, the developers go crazy and they go like, we need not 21 million Bitcoins, we need 50 million. And they change the code. And they say, okay, run this code as a new, you know, upgrade your code in your mining machines, and we're going to have 50 million Bitcoins. We're going to be all richer, right? Of course, we're not going to be richer if you do that, but like, let's say they do that, right? And the miners would say, well, they may say no, right? And if the miners say no, that this code won't be run. They will still run the previous version of the code. So there's no consensus. Let's say that the miners agree and say, okay, let's make more of them. We can make money, blah, blah, blah. And then the market says, what? I bought the Bitcoin based on the assumption that there's never going to be more than 21 million. And now you're making 50 million. I will dump it. I will sell it. All right. Maybe somebody will fork, like some miner will fork it or some developer will fork it. And it's going to be Bitcoin original. And that's going to have all the value. So unless everybody agrees on something, this thing doesn't happen, right? So if the market becomes mostly centralized institutions like exchanges like Coinbase or ETF owners like this, you know, these companies which launched it, they are the market. So if you have an ETF with them, you gave them money, they didn't give you the Bitcoin, but and they retain the right to vote right? So let's say that some, you know, like some countries meeting at Davos or the WEF, whatever, they say, okay, great, Bitcoin is fine, crypto is fine, but we should make self-custody illegal because, you know, the usual criminals and terrorists and stuff like this. And let's say that the miners are captured too, because miners are big companies and they are now as many as in America. Let's say that many miners are captured and they're going to have to comply. Otherwise, the FBI goes there and, you know, shuts them down. So they're going to comply. Okay, we will not allow self-custody. Let's say the developers comply too. That's much harder, but let's say that they comply too and they write some code which kind of detects, I mean, this is pretty stupid what I'm saying, but like, let's say, just to make the example, the detects if it's a self-custody wallet, in that case, it's banned, right? And then if the market is in the hands of big central corporations, they will accept too because they are all for centralization. They don't care for you to have a self-custody wallet, and they will accept too. And then Bitcoin becomes centralized. Like Bitcoin is only allowed to be held in KYC central corporations like banks, exchanges, and ETFs. So you have basically killed Bitcoin for what it is. It's going to still be called Bitcoin, but it's something else. That's the risk, right? And this is, I'm not able to assess this kind of risk, but it is there. If the market, if most people holding Bitcoin do not hold the private keys, then Bitcoin is weaker. The whole value proposition of Bitcoin is less. And this is not to say that it will die, because still that will be the only asset with limited supply in the world. Not even gold has limited supply because they mine it every day, right? So it could still have value, but it will be something different. Like maybe, I mean, for sure, in that situation, I wouldn't be able to send Bitcoin where I want, how I want. I should ask for permission in the same way as I ask for permission today when I use a bank account, right? This is kind of the point. So self-custody keeps the vote with you. And when the vote is with you, there is more decentralization. It means the system is more resilient to external attacks. Now, what does would mean in Web3 in trouble? Well, it's a complete different scenario because we're not talking about money. We're talking about systems which allow people to travel, right? So if the standard way to hold crypto is through a centralized system, it will be much easier. Adoption will be faster, as adoption has been much faster with, you know, Coinbase and Binance, etc., rather than self-hosted wallets. But we do lose the hardness of protocols. By protocol meaning everything which allows for value to be transferred and for information to be transferred, right? Which then means how easy it is for people to build on top of them. Let's refresh this concept. If a protocol is really decentralized, any startup would or any company would build on it without thinking twice because it's decentralized. Again, it's the same thing as the internet, right? If the internet is decentralized, I am going to invest a lot of money to build something on top of it because I know that nobody can stop me. It's this permissionless property, right? While if I have to build something on the Twitter API or the GPT API, I know that it can stop me at any time or increase the prices or whatever, right? So if we have a, let's say, a decentralized protocol for representing, for instance, nights booked, right? And this is an NFT, which is actually decentralized, I can build a startup on top of it. But if and the NFT is decentralized because let's say that the protocol is Ethereum, it's not going to be in trouble, it's too expensive, but let's say the NFT is on Ethereum, Ethereum is decentralized. I know that if I launch an NFT nights booking kind of startup or service, no one will stop me for doing that because the NFTs are decentralized because the chain is decentralized or, you know, decentralized to a big enough degree to not to make me worry about that. That's why is the chain decentralized? Because most people hold their ETH in their wallet or staked in a contract, which is also decentralized. If everybody, let's say there's a crypto travel protocol, which is based on a token, and this token is held, not by users, but in a centralized system, then like a startup would say, will I risk building on top of it when all the tokens are in the hands of two companies who are custodying these tokens for the users, but they could decide at any time to stop it, to take the money away, or vote against the possibility to do this kind of, NFT nights. No, then to make it like very clear, it's like decentralization is good for innovation because you can, they remove a risk of innovation. Centralization is good for adoption, but it's really bad for innovation. Because then when you develop, you are hoping, you have a risk in the centralized entity allowing you in the future to do the same thing which you've been doing so far. I know it's been very, the way I explained this is very bad, but let's make an example with GPT. So you have ChatGPT, which is fantastic. It gives you many ideas. Why don't we build some GPT doing some other things? So what you do, you launch a front end, you write some prompts, you connect to the GPT API, and you pay for it, of course. And then at a certain point, OpenAI says, from tomorrow, these kind of apps are not allowed anymore for any reason. You know, maybe they want to build a competitor themselves. Maybe they're not profitable, whatever. Or maybe they say, okay, it's going to cost you 10 times more, whatever. Okay, so everything you have built on top of a centralized API is dead from one day to the other. The same thing happened with Twitter many years ago. So investors won't give money to startups who build simply API-based systems. And startups won't take the risk, and innovation is dead. You don't see them dying because they're not even born. You don't see the crash because it happens inside people's minds. It's this self-censoring of certain ideas. I won't even think about it because I know the risks, right? And we don't want that in Web3 and travel. We want to have as wide enough decentralized layer of protocols on top of which we want to build stuff. So if this layer is really resilient and the space is really wide, we're going to have a lot of stuff built on top of it. And that stuff may not be decentralized, maybe half decentralized. It doesn't really matter. It depends on the use case. But we need that that layer, right? We already have that layer in crypto primitives, but we need specific layers for travel, right? And if the whole travel industry adopts crypto in a centralized manner, so with custody of tokens, we will have a smaller decentralized layer, and there's going to be less stuff we can build on top of. Again, this is not, it's never black and white. It's not like that we won't have anything. We will have something. Even the simple properties of composability, they are there even if the system is centralized. And do we need composability in travel? Yeah, because we have a lot of fragmentation. So how do we fix the fragmentation? With composability. Is it decentralized? No. It doesn't matter. We made a step ahead anyway, a step forward anyway, right? But the real change is when we have not only composability, but we also have decentralization. And right now in crypto, and I'm talking about like general crypto, there is this tension between composability and decentralization. Composability and fragmentation. So all the layers to on top of Ethereum, for instance, are making it faster and cheaper. But they're also breaking it in many fragments. So if everything I do is on the layer one of Ethereum, composability is 100%. It doesn't matter. Whatever you build, I can tap into this. I have all these Lego Lego bricks and I can put them together and build something great. But now you have some in Optimism, some in Arbitrium, and some in like, there's like 19 layer twos right now. So, and they are not interconnected in the same way as they are, the things are interconnected and composable in layer ones. So it's always a tension. That's maybe the biggest lesson here. There's no black and white in centralization versus decentralization. There's no black and white in composability versus non-composability or fragmentation. There's no black and white between self-custody and central custody. And in this last case, the central custody is actually something we will see, because most people are not able to deal with seed phrases until actually we fix the problem, making self-custody easier. And again, it's a whole a waltz, a dance between these opposing extremes of these ladders. But let's go back to the Bitcoin ETF and the legitimacy which it brings to the travel industry. Let's have some vision here. In the distant future, we will have an IPO of a Web3 travel company, a bit like the Coinbase IPO, and it's a crypto company. 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now, I don't know. We may even have ETFs relative to travel where the company is a Web3 travel company. What happened last week is that this era has started. This is the era which will take us from complete fringe ideas with no real product market fit to complete mainstream, where the whole travel industry, in a way or another, is running on the new internet. Now, how do we get there? Well, that's the journey I'm very curious to go in. Going back to what will change, you know, effectively in Web3 and travel after this ETF has been approved and went on the market, I think maybe one of the first things changing would be funding, in terms of like who is going to be willing to invest now in these things. Because, you know, the Bitcoin ETF has been a financial event mostly. Everybody is in finance, and so I suppose venture capitalists are very careful about everything happening there. Those who haven't seen this yet, because some have seen it, there's funding in Web3 and travel, but not much yet, right? So those who haven't seen it are going to say, okay, but crypto now is investable. They're going to think, maybe I can invest in something in crypto now. Maybe I can, you know, invest in Web3 in travel. So when a startup comes up with an idea, it's probably going to be easier now to get the ear of venture capitalists in this. Of course, everything else being equal, if you know, interest rates stay high, this makes it harder, and you know, maybe the economy is going down, maybe there's a recession, I don't know. But everything being equal, this ETF is going to probably unlock a lot of capital towards the whole crypto space and also, of course, the Web3 travel space, which is, let's remember, it's still very small. It's still, nobody's really thinking about that in the general, you know, in the general world, I would say, even in crypto, it's still a not mainstream narrative. But talking of narratives and changing subject here, something has changed. Well, I realized something, which I didn't, and I'm a bit ashamed of it because it was in front of my eyes. So maybe I think I talked about this a few months ago, and I said that one of the next narratives, maybe this cycle narrative, is going to be RWA, so real world assets. And when I was talking about real world assets, my mind was going to real estate, mostly, like, you know, tokenized buildings, for instance, tokenized real estate, and maybe hotels in travel, etc. But real world assets, which in my mind was stuff you can touch, right? And then I had this epiphany. I can't remember where, but of course on Twitter, somebody said, I think that was the Travel, to be fair, which talked about their NFT, so Knight tokens, so tokens which represent Knights. They're going to launch something like that very soon. You know, there's been an interview with Cynthia on this podcast a couple of episodes back. And then I realized, wow, real world assets are everything connected to the real world. So also Knights, right? And then I realized everything in Travel is a real world asset. Every time crypto, kind of in Web3 and Travel, we try to sell something, trade something, every time we try to represent something from the travel industry, from the travel space, in crypto, we are representing real world assets because crypto is real world. You know, you are traveling for sure, for real. You are getting a real plane. You're staying in a real accommodation. You're getting a real public transport or real taxi. So everything in crypto is real world assets, which brings me to the conclusion that if the narrative of real world assets really takes hold, the travel industry may be on top of it, may get a lift out of that, with the difference that it may be easier in travel than in real estate or other verticals. Why? Well, because there's a main difficulty in connecting crypto and real world asset is that blockchains do not see reality. And so the blockchain can tell you, yeah, this NFT represents a house or a fraction of the house. Give me the money. You have exposure to the price. And then somebody goes to a judge, the owner of the house goes to a judge and says, people are saying this house is represented by NFTs, and maybe even got the money for that, right? But I don't recognize that. And unless the judge recognizes the value of the NFT for the house title, your NFT is worth nothing. And you need laws for that. Yeah, okay, in the Anglo-Saxon world, probably you need precedent, but in the Latin world, you probably need a specific law. I'm not an expert in that, but still, we don't have the legal framework for that yet. But in travel, it's not that, it's different. Like, if a big airline sells, this NFT represents a ticket, well, now you have something much more reliable because they have their brand guaranteeing this. Let's say the Lufthansa says, okay, buy this ticket as an NFT and then you can sell it on secondary marketplaces. And you buy it and then you go and you want to travel. They're not going to tell you at the airport, yeah, NFT, what is that, right? They issue the NFT. You can trust them. Same goes for Hilton. Same goes for any big company. Of course, as the company gets smaller and the brand gets less valuable, the risk increase. So if a small hotel somewhere in some country tells you, give me $100 for this stay, and then they don't honor the NFT, you don't have many recourses because, you know, just a small hotel. And then you say, oh, I should have booked through an OTA. But still, real world assets in travel are much closer to reality, much safer than real world assets representing, again, real estate or something much, much bigger. Because we don't need lawyers in that case. We don't need laws. We have brands protecting the concept, right? So to sum it up, we have gained a lot of legitimacy from the Bitcoin ETF. This legitimacy is not there yet. It's kind of going to percolate slowly in the minds of the travel industry in the next year. We have a strong and growing narrative in crypto on real world assets, RWA, and travel is a real world asset vertical. This is my new realization. And then we have a bull run coming. Well, we've been in a bull run for a year probably, but it's going to get wilder. It's going to be really wild, as every time, but every time it surprised me. So we have at least three things which are, you know, blowing wind into our sails. So I'm not worried for this year of irrelevance. We went through the irrelevance valley for a couple of years. We went through the we are considered as idiots phase for a couple of years. Now we're going to go back to the we are geniuses. And again, we are We are none of them, but anyway, somewhere in the middle. So there's a lot of headwinds. I think that's the word in English, when the wind is blowing in your favor on your sales. What I'm worrying about is that we fuck it up, is that we get lost in the hype. You know, that's what crypto does to everybody. We convince ourselves we are geniuses. We think that token going up is product market fit and all that. Those things which always happen. This could be the year, or you know, this could be the cycle where crypto travel goes mainstream, and instead of capitalizing on it, we destroy everything, and then we have to wait 4 more years to actually create something people want. Let's see. It's going to be a fun year. And we're done. Thank you for listening to this episode. For more insights, follow me on Twitter at Tripluca, TRIPLUCA. If you enjoy my podcast and want to support it, head on to podcast.webtreeintravel.com. Tree is a digit. And mint an NFT. If you want to sponsor it, you can do it at the same page. I will mention you in the podcast, and your name will appear on all donation NFTs for a while. Thank you, and ciao.